From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you're feeling lonely, you are not alone. A Cigna survey found that more than half of Americans report feeling lonely. Public health officials cite research linking social isolation to severe health consequences and reductions in lifespan similar to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Julia Bainbridge digs below those numbers for How People Experience This Aspect of the Human Condition in the Lonely Hour podcast.
All right, here's the big one. What does loneliness mean to you? That is a great question. Loneliness.
We are digging into the experience of loneliness at a time which can feel especially acute around the holidays with Julia Bainbridge. She's James Beard Award nominated food writer for Bon Appetit and Atlanta Magazine and the host and creator of the Lonely Hour podcast. Hello, Julia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine and curious about this because, you know, loneliness is something that people steer clear of. Why take it on as a topic for a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, as you cited, millions of people are suffering from social disconnection, right? And that increasing disconnection is really what inspired the show. Like, I observed the ways in which technology is distancing us from one another. I saw more and more people freelancing or otherwise working alone in this like gig economy. I learned that more people are living alone and aging alone than ever before. And I watched friends and frankly, even myself growing increasingly disappointed with the kind of video gamification of dating through apps like Tinder. So I wanted to explore what all that looked like. So that was kind of the catalyst, but the approach, which I know we'll get into, but it's to catalog people's experiences with loneliness so that we get more comfortable with it, right? Like, there's this taboo around loneliness, and yet it's something we all feel sometimes. So my show aims to demonstrate how much loneliness exists in all of us. It's part of the mixed bag of emotions involved in the human experience.
Yeah, so into season two already, you talked about your own loneliness, which is prevalent in contemporary society statistically, but there was some kind of hesitation in admitting that. What have those conversations you've had with people revealed about that really shame about loneliness to you?
It's funny that I was hesitant to talk about my own loneliness and I'm the girl with the show on loneliness. I think that maybe that says something. That may have had more to do with my wanting this to be a show about other people. And while I have like very little kind of shame about talking my own life and revealing all of my struggles for some reason, it wasn't the Julia show, right? Like, this was a show about this topic, but it was funny that sort of tearful conversation I had with my producers when they pushed me to insert myself into the show a little bit. So, you know, I'm still unpacking that, but that's a worthwhile thing to share that may reveal certainly how deep rooted this taboo is. But, you know, through the conversations I've had with guests, I think what I knew to be true about loneliness has just been underscored. Like, it's something that exists in all of us, and yet there's this taboo. And I learn a lot from my guests, but I also learn a lot from the reading I do around this topic. So here's an idea that might interest you as far as how to explain the taboo. There's John Cacioppo, who was the director of the Center for Cognitive Neuroscience at the University of Chicago. He unfortunately passed away last year, but he had been studying the effects and causes of loneliness for over two decades. And he believed that loneliness, which he also calls social pain, is a kind of alarm signal. Like, it's nature's way of telling us to rejoin the group lest we compromise our health, which Cacioppo showed is linked to feeling part of a society. So in a way, the stigma against loneliness has value. Like, our discomfort with solitary life is a survival instinct.
Right. So if you're the lone antelope outside of the herd, you better get back in there or you're not going to make it.
Exactly. But, you know, what? As far as what I've learned based on the Lonely Hour listener feedback is that talking about loneliness or hearing others talk about loneliness, which is, you know, why I wanted to do this on a audio platform, makes people feel less lonely. So, you know, someone recently wrote to me that it's intensely comforting to know that I'm not alone in my loneliness. So that's what inspires me to keep making this show.
You spoke with a woman named Aimé Lutkin. She wrote an article for Jezebel, "When Can I Say I'll Be Alone Forever?" And that got an awful lot of attention. What does she mean by that question?
Yeah, that was a brilliant article. And, you know, she meant that, I think what she meant is that there's no acceptable language around what she was going through at that time, right? Like, she's someone who, at the time of writing the piece, hadn't dated or had sex for years, and she was beginning to wrap her mind around the possibility that that just might be how life is going to look for her from here on out. Like, but she feels like she's not allowed to talk about that, which, as she wrote, makes it a hell of a lot harder to live with. Like, you know, when she tries to tell a friend that she thinks she'll be alone forever, which, by the way, isn't something she cries herself to sleep at night over, they imagine bleakness. They want it to stop. And that's because it's so deeply embedded in our society to fix our lives around partnership and children, you know.
Mm. And this is something that people feel acutely around the holidays. In fact, Aimé talked with you about facing New Year's Eve alone again.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had the resolution many times in the past few years to be like, okay, this is the year I'm going to start dating. I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to try harder because I haven't been making space for this. But I realize, you know, I have not made good on any of those promises to myself, and I'm not sure why. But I've reached a point where I can no longer act like something deeper isn't going on.
You dive into the deeper going on for Aimé, but let's look at the holidays for a second, which are approaching. And a single friend of mine calls the holidays the Bermuda Triangle of loneliness, you know, something you have talked about with your guests. And I don't by any means want to say that only single people experience loneliness, but tell me about some of the things that you heard from guests about just that experience of loneliness, especially when everybody else is around feeling joyful, feeling seemingly jubilant, at least that's how it looks on the outside.
Right. I mean, it's IRL Instagram, right? Like, it's sort of like, this is what we talk about when we talk about social media, and you scroll through all these photos of people looking happy and fabulous. You know, that becomes 3D around the holidays when you've got, you know, the city's all dressed up in lights, and there are a million parties. And I think sometimes that can be overwhelming and can make you feel alone. But, you know, also when we talk about the holidays, like, I talked to a family therapist named Courtney Schifrin, and, you know, family can be maddening, right? So, like, even if you're not actually alone and you have a big family and you're home for the holidays, like, there's some self-preservation, I think, that she would recommend shutting the door sometimes to let you recharge, right? And that to prepare you to face the stress that can come with those big family gatherings, I think, for a lot of us.
That's something that I saw over and over again, this kind of experience between being alone, you know, by seemingly feeling like you're forced to be alone because nobody is connecting with you or you're not connecting with them, and the need for contemplation, reflection, time alone. Here is one of your guests, Stephen Satterfield, defining what loneliness means to him.
Loneliness is just a bit more sad than being alone. But it's also something that we've all felt before. But when we're able to identify these gloomy feelings and to grow around them and move beyond them, then there's a new kind of power that we imbue and that we embody because we've persevered, we've grown, we've evolved.
That's Stephen Satterfield speaking on the Lonely Hour podcast. My guest is the host and creator of that podcast, Julia Bainbridge. Julia, Stephen's suggesting that, you know, sitting with the feelings, this is what we're told, right? That's the key. Yet we live in this era when we have a sense of connection at our fingertips with social media. But a lot of research is telling us that that can feel even more isolating, or we can feel depressed because our lives look less than Instagrammable. And you talk with Patrick Janelle, who has a robust social media following, about this. He admits that it's kind of an addiction for him. How does he keep that in perspective?
Yeah, he's a hard case because for Patrick, this is a job, right? Like, he makes a living through Instagram. So the stakes are pretty high. The public approval, you know, followers and brands wanting to work with him because of those followers drives his finances. So he spends a lot of time thinking about and measuring through metrics that public approval, and that can have a detrimental effect, I think, on his psyche and his self-esteem. But so for Patrick, maybe, again, those stakes are higher because this is how he makes a living, but that's something that we can all identify with, right? Like that seeking that public approval through likes and whatnot. I want to go back. God, first of all, can we just like give a shout out to Steven Satterfield's voice and how beautiful and deep it is. But I want to, you know, something that he was getting to there is the distinction between loneliness and solitude, right? Like the way I think about it, and this is something that comes up often as I talk about this show and with my guests too. So I guess I just want to get it out of the way. Like the way I think about it, the aloneness is a state, right? The state of being alone. And loneliness is a negative feeling, a sad feeling over that state. And then there's solitude, which I see as having a more positive connotation. Like people seek solitude. It can be a recharging time, right? And I think the key here is that like both loneliness and solitude are mental things, right? They have to do with perception. Loneliness is perceived isolation. So going back to Cacioppo's work, according to him, loneliness refers to the perception that one's social relationships are inadequate in light of one's preferences for social involvement. So introverts, interestingly enough, in his studies, show none of the health risk factors that married persons with perceived isolation showed. Isn't that kind of fascinating?
Well, there are people that you speak to. Well, let me just make clear that you explore feelings of isolation and motherhood, you know, the guilt of not feeling absolutely joyful and grateful every minute for being a mom, being the only person of color in the office, dining alone, traveling alone. And what I hear is that very human tendency to perceive ourselves as different from other shiny, happy people around us or compare ourselves. That creates separateness. So we are, in a way, perceiving something that isn't necessarily true, or do we just project that it's true because everybody looks so happy?
Right. I mean, yeah, I'm not myself a therapist, but one conclusion I've come to in life is that kind of we're all the walking wounded, right? And we're all deeply insecure, and that insecurity's the root of all evil, as far as I'm concerned, including the tendency to compare ourselves to others and arrive at false conclusions. I think that less than is something we tend to feed ourselves. And Instagram, I guess, you know, getting back to the social media conversation, has allowed us to mainline that stuff. So, you know.
Well, you spoke to Michael Finkel. He is a writer who covered the case of this just fascinating hermit. He dropped out of life. Christopher Knight was 20 when he left his car at a campground in central Maine, and he spent 27 years in the woods. He was called the North Pond Hermit. We used to read about him back in when I was living in New England. So you thought that maybe he had, I don't know, a screw loose, did he?
No, I mean... Once he was captured, I guess you would call it, he went through a bunch of testing, both physical and mental, and he was, for all intents and purposes, a normal guy. Very unusual, but nothing, quote unquote, wrong with him.
Michael got to speak with Christopher Knight, and like many hermits throughout history who've written about the razor-thin line between extreme suffering and extreme joy, he found that in his conversation with Christopher Knight. Here's what he said.
And he said there were these moments where, I think he described the earth as like hard frozen, the forest is completely locked in Arctic silence. There's not even a bird or a whisper of wind, and he's sitting there in his tent, and it's very cold, and it's like there's this silence. And what he said to me was, even more than silence, what he liked was, as he said, stillness. And he said, there's something profound about the stillness of the middle of winter, where you could literally hear your own heartbeat. And he would lay in his tent, halfway suffering and halfway ecstatic. And the way he described that to me, I couldn't really get my head around how someone could do that, but it was clearly this sort of mystical state that he reached, and it stays with me. It stays with me always.
What do you think, Julia? Do some people just not feel lonely?
I mean, some less than others, I think. Christopher is an extreme example of someone who just seems numb to it, almost unhappy when in society, or maybe he's in denial. I mean, either way, he survived out there and most of us wouldn't. But it makes me think of Randall Reeves from the very first episode. He's a single hander, which means he goes on long sails alone. And by long, I mean like circumnavigating both the Americas and the Antarctic, right? Like these are extreme also. And he says that the times that he's out to sea are times when he feels really connected to the boat, connected to the ocean, connected to the albatrosses that fly close. So he's just built to enjoy that one-on-one connection to nature in a way that not everyone is. Plenty of people would get really lonely out there, but he doesn't.
How does it feel for you, somebody who I'm guessing a lot of people have listened to and turned to, and it has helped them feel more connected to others? So what is your role here?
I got to keep making the show. I mean, I think it's interesting, though, you know, like I'm not... My role is to be a shepherd of this conversation, but I'm wary to call myself an expert. I have maybe some more expertise than others because I spend a lot of time talking to people about this and reading about this topic. But I do have some people coming to me because I've identified myself as a safe haven. I think when you attach yourself to this topic, who come to me in very compromised states looking for help. And I have learned that I have to put up some boundaries. I do the best I can to direct them to resources that might help them, but I'm not a therapist, right? So I think my role is to continue to talk about loneliness because we don't see it talked about a lot, and certainly not in kind of, I think, the nuanced way that the show does. I mean, this topic is gaining traction because a lot of people are saying that we're facing this loneliness epidemic. But a lot of the articles I read are about, you know, seven ways to combat loneliness. And I think I'm not necessarily trying to put it in the problem box. I mean, not to sound too zen, but I'm coming from a place of acceptance that this is this is something that we all feel sometimes. And that's why it's so important to neutralize the taboo around it, because we are all connected to loneliness.
Julia Bainbridge, James Beard Award-nominated food writer for Bon Appetit. She is also host and creator of the Lonely Hour podcast. Stay with us. There's more on Second Thought coming up after a short break.